Hello and welcome back, or welcome for the first time, to Ask Margot. I'm Margot de Coatsworth, and this is your opportunity to ask questions that concern you and that you need answers for. I'm a hypnotherapist, a transformational guide, and a conduit for messages from the universe, aka God, which I call the Word. My entire work rests on one truth, that you are the creator of your reality, and that this reality is created and changed within you and not outside of you. You've got the power. My mission is to tell people just that, and to show them how to use that power, to put each one of us back in the control seat of our lives. Every episode, I respond to the questions you send in or that have popped up in my world. Questions about love, about clarity, about why things haven't shifted yet, or how to get them to shift. We address health especially because I'm convinced that we are designed to be healthy. We need to know how to restore our health and maintain it. I answer questions not just as a therapist or a coach, but as a seeker. And that seeker has got a capital S. There are people who have a message to bring to the world, which is another way of saying they've found the answers many of us are looking for. One such person, who's sadly no longer in this world, whose work I admire and have found enormous insight around, is Neville Goddard. He clearly explains the principle that we create our world through the assumptions we hold and the states we occupy. We don't wait to see it to believe it. We believe it and then we see it. That's also what Jesus said, of course. In Mark, he says, "Therefore I tell you, whatever you ask in prayer, believe you have received it." It's past tense. "And it will be yours." This emphasizes the importance of believing you've received what you've asked for, just as if it already exists. We find that concept so tough and so challenging. How can we believe what we don't see? Or even more tricky, how will believing it make it happen? It makes you think, is that madness? Well, maybe, but if this kind of mad thinking gets us to where we want to be, is it really that mad? So if your world feels uncertain, or your power feels distant, or your path feels foggy, stay with me here. If this is new to you, firstly, realize that your whole life is an experiment made up of the choices you are making. The choices create the outcome. If you don't like the outcome, make some different choices. Try a different experiment. All the questions this week I'm going to answer clearly from the perspective that we must live from the end, or live from the feeling of the wish we have already fulfilled. As they say in the movie The Knight's Tale, which I loved, then you can change your stars. Our first question today is about rewriting our concept of self. And our questions this week are brought to you by the letter H for anonymity of our questioners. This one is from Harry, who says, "I feel like I'm still defined by who I used to be. How do I truly become someone new?" Well, I love this question because our self-concept or our self-perception is the foundation of absolutely everything in our lives. Everything. Our confidence, the quality of our relationships, what we aspire to, and therefore what we can achieve. When we want to change the world around us, we must start by changing the inner identity we are living from. And I'm speaking to myself here as much as anyone. If you feel you are still defined by your past, by old choices, wounds, relationships, or roles, it means your body and mind are still rehearsing the state of your former self. And that's just a habit. But what if you don't change by effort and you change instead by assumption? What an interesting word. It's not one I usually use. At its simplest, an assumption is something you accept as true without needing external proof in the moment. I'm not saying that you don't then follow through with actions, but our actions are a result of what we believe, i.e. how we see ourselves. Close your eyes and imagine yourself as the version of you who no longer feels stuck in the past. Not because you've denied it, but because you're no longer ruled by it. Look at what's behind you and say, oh yes, that was the case then, but it isn't anymore. Now I'm free to be strong and clear about who I am and my potential. Never underestimate the power of how you talk to yourself. Your subconscious is always listening. Here's a bit of a mind bender. What if that version of you already exists? I don't usually talk about alternative universes or realities or that kind of thing, but just go with me on this one. If your only job is to assume him and occupy that chosen state until it feels natural, then that's an easy enough job. Here's a practice I give to my clients. Choose a phrase that belongs to your future self or the self who's sorted out whatever the issue is you're dealing with. Something simple like, I'm already him. It's natural for me now. And begin to weave it into your day, when you're brushing your teeth, when you're choosing what to wear, when you look in the mirror. Repeat it, anchor it, own it, make it your I am statement. You're not fixing your past self, you're simply moving your awareness into a different version, one who isn't trying to prove, recover, or explain, one who already is what you want. The magic moment is when you stop looking back to check if you've changed, because you already have. Let the old story be a chapter that no longer defines the plot. You don't need to fight with that old version. You just don't have to live there anymore. Your new self is already real. Just step into him, Harry. When you start living from your new self-concept, everything else has no choice but to change. People will start to treat you differently. I know this because I've done it. And not because they have changed, but because they're responding to the new identity that you are radiating. Let me share a story from one of my clients who had always seen herself as someone who wasn't taken seriously. Clever, but always underestimated. She changed nothing about her qualifications, her voice, her wardrobe, although they are reflections. What did she change? She changed her state. She began to walk into meetings with the assumption that people would seek her input, that she was the room's quiet anchor. Within a few weeks, her entire work environment shifted. This is how it happens, from the inside out. You don't have to force change. You assume it. Step into it like you own it. That's how you become someone new. I hope that helps you, Harry. I was going to say inspires you, but inspiration without tangible follow-through is kind of redundant, I think. What's the point of being inspired and then have nothing change that matches that inspiration? The tagline for my business used to be unlimited inspiration, and then I asked myself, well, what does that actually achieve? It seemed very nebulous to me, so I added something tangible, and now I say unlimited inspiration, which makes us feel good, and real transformation, which gets the change to actually show up in real time. I guess any of you who have been listening to the show will know that I don't really toe the party line. We don't see change because we force it from the outside. It just doesn't work. Or because we try to force others to change, which we seem to always be doing, so that things are better for us. This also does not work. No one wants to have change forced on them. Ask yourself, do you? No, of course not. We want to decide for ourselves, and we do. I'm going to go further here and say that change, real permanent change, only ever comes from the inside. Then it shows up on the outside. Thoughts become things. The work we have to do is internal. It's within. If you're trying to make a change of any kind in your world, start by looking at yourself and let the change begin there. Our next question today is around money and receiving, always a sensitive subject. This is a question from Helen, who says, I say I want abundance, but I still seem to block it. How do I stop sabotaging what I want and what I ask for? Helen, even though consciously we say we want money, we often make vision boards, write affirmations, create business plans, but unconsciously, many of us are still in a relationship with lack. And the universe doesn't respond to what we want, it responds to what we are. So what we think we want, what we desire, what we talk about are one thing, but if we undo it by something deeper, we're not going anywhere. I've actually written that phrase on my wall, that we get what we are and not necessarily what we want or what we think we want. I often write these things on my wall in chalk so that I am constantly aware of them. To be rich is to feel rich. And that's not about credit cards or luxury handbags. It's about state. It's about your identity. What does the version of you who always have enough feel like? In her body, in her day, in her interactions? How is she speaking? I remember working with a woman who had a message to share. She had trained and invested in learning. She was ready to charge well for her work, but every time a client showed interest, she backed away and said, oh, let me offer you a discount, or I can do something cheaper. She didn't know it, but she was quietly rejecting the very abundance that she claimed she wanted. When we explored more deeply, we found an old belief. If she had money, people would leave her. She'd be different. She'd be isolated. That belief had to be rewritten at a subconscious level before she could receive. You don't need to earn abundance. You just need to allow it. And allowing begins by embodying the version of you who feels at home and at ease with it. So ask yourself, do I trust myself to have more? Do I believe I'm still lovable, grounded, and true if I have wealth? Can I celebrate receiving without guilt? Receiving is not a reward, it's a reflection. Begin by treating yourself as someone whom money loves, someone at ease with money, someone who blesses what flows out, someone who expects flowing to come back to them, someone who's in the flow. You can say to yourself, money flows to me because I trust myself with it. It's natural for me to be well supported financially. I manage money with respect and grace. I'm in a perfect flow of giving and receiving. And every time you feel resistance, don't be fazed by that. Just smile and say, ah, there's that old story, but I'm not living that anymore. You don't have to be perfect to be wealthy. You just have to become energetically available to it. And you must hold that state consistently, no matter how long things seem to be taking. Receiving is a skill, a choice. Listen to your conversations around money and make sure your genie is hearing the story you really want to tell. I knew someone who always panicked when they had money coming in because of their history of not being good with it. Once they changed that thinking and started to say things like, I always have plenty of money for everything I need. I'm wise with money, a good steward of it. Money is drawn to me and flows to me and out from me in perfect balance. And here's a great phrase from a chap called Joe Vitale. He's written lots of books. He said, the more money I spend, the more money I receive. Now that sounds like it needs a bit of editing or a tagline of caution, but think about it. If that isn't an abundant mindset, I don't know what is. In moments of tension around money, in the apparent shortage of it, I will sometimes say to others, oh, well, there's plenty more where that came from. You should see the reaction you get from saying something like that. Or if someone says, oh, and where's the money coming from? You must just say, from wherever it is now. This may sound silly or even dangerous, but what it does do is make the conversation lighter, and I know that always helps us. And both of those statements are factually true. There is more money all around, and when it comes, it will come from wherever it is now. Somehow we have to make friends with money, make it our ally and not something that pulls up our defences and our armour. I get really fluffy when people say all rich people are greedy and wicked. Money is simply a tool. We're the ones who choose how to use it and whether it's for good or bad. Money is an amplifier. If you are a greedy, wicked person who's poor, you will be a greedy and wicked rich person. If you want to do good but you're poor, it's hard to make a big change if you don't have the resources. But it's possible to change a lot for many faster than a poor person could. So a generous-hearted poor person, if they become rich, will be a generous-hearted rich person. Helen, as a therapist, I would say, pop into your past to see what your subconscious beliefs around money are. Shake that loose and then reframe the beliefs that are sabotaging you. Follow that with the new story you tell. Often people have been indoctrinated from their youth with people saying things to them like, money doesn't grow on trees. You'll have heard some of these. Do you think I'm made of money? You have to work hard for every dollar. I'm just not good with money. Rich people are selfish and greedy, and I don't want to be like that. I can't afford that. I don't care about money. I care about people. Or I'm just not materialistic. Do you see that the picture that's being painted here, it's one of lack? All that erroneous chat has laid down a subconscious blueprint of poverty thinking. You need to change that. That will enable you to move forward with confidence so you have a new story to step into. Say to yourself, I'm designed for and wired for success. Because it's true. I'm great with money. I'm irresistible to money. Go all out now. Look in the mirror and say, I'm a money-making machine. I'm so good with money. The more I spend, the more I receive. When you pay your bills, say, thank you that I'm able to pay this bill. Thank you, electricity company, for your supply, because that's often a whopper bill. And say thank you, universe, for my constant supply. Step into it. Make it simple. Make it yours. Make this a game, Helen, one you fully intend to win. Our next question today is about decision-making and inner knowing. Hope has a question. She says, I don't trust myself to make big decisions. How do I know what's right? I'm full of doubt sometimes. I know we've had questions like this before. I want to begin with a reminder, Hope. The ability to make good decisions is something you can access. It's an intrinsic part of who you really are. You were born with it. Somewhere along the way, you just learned to be influenced by other voices more than your own single true voice, or more than what the universe would say to you. We've all been there. So close your eyes and imagine the version of you who has already made the decision. She's calm, she's clear, she feels strong and steady in her body. She's not second guessing or replaying scenarios in her mind. She simply knows, and that knowing is quiet, not loud, but clear. If you like to ask for guidance from God or the universe, then when you say thank you for direction and clarity, that's all you need to say. Because when you say thank you, it's because you've accepted something. You have accepted clarity, knowing, and the insight about the right decision to make. Don't second guess it. And of course, I'm going to remind you then to listen to your internal chat and what you say to others. Let this be the last time you say, "I'm confused." Have you ever noticed that people who say that all the time are confused all the time? Stop that nonsense. You must now say, "I have such amazing clarity. I always know exactly what to choose, what to do, and what my next step should be. Thank you, universe." And if you find yourself constantly asking others for advice, take it as a cue to go inward instead. You can still get input, but make sure it supports the voice within, not replaces it. We need to silence our chatterbrain and tune in to the still small voice. It won't be a shout, it will be a whisper. We have sadly, foolishly allowed the clamour and opinion of many to cloud our ability to hear the single voice we need to hear. The more often you listen, the clearer it gets. That's how you build trust, through practice. One thing I've seen is that when people get an intuitive knowing but then argue against it, that important voice gets quieter and harder to recognise. If you get a prompt to do something and you think that prompt has come from on high, or however you like to put it, follow it. And then the next time it will be even clearer to distinguish that from the noisy world around you. Ignoring that voice and guidance and intuition shuts it down. I've seen it often. So go quiet and tune in hope. Because doubt is nothing but fear disguised as reason. It tries to keep you safe by immobilizing you to keep you from disappointment, but also it keeps you from transformation. It's a chain that binds you to your current or past state. One of my favorite sayings is that the past does not equal the future. Every single day is a new opportunity to make a new choice, believe a new thing is possible for you, to tell a new story. Why would any of us want to live our life based on the limitations of what has already gone before? Why be trapped in repetition, experiencing the same circumstances over and over again? Do something radical and ignore the facts as you have perceived them or experienced them. Ignore the numbers, the statistics, the opinions of others. Instead, go inward. Create within yourself the certainty of what you desire and that it's already yours. Step into it. Feel the reality of it so deeply that there's no room for doubt, because once you know something to be true within, the world has to fall into line. Imagine a sculptor standing before a block of stone. If you were to look at the stone and say, "This is just a rock, there's no statue here, it's impossible to change it," then the sculptor would never do his work. But he does not see only the stone. He sees what's hidden within it. He knows that the statue already exists. He simply has to remove what does not belong. Your desires are the same. The reality you seek is already present in what I call the unseen. You only need to remove doubt and limitation to reveal it. Sometimes you have to throw some time into the mix as well. I always like to put that in as a proviso because that's been my experience. You can change your mind in an instant, but then mostly, in my experience, it takes time for life to catch up. So hold your position anyway, because there's no other position worth having. I hope there's some value there for you, Helen. Well, our last question today is about creating stability in chaos. Hector wrote in and wants to know, when life is uncertain or falling apart, how do I stay in faith? Let's begin by looking at the definition of faith. This is an expanded version of it, but I do love it. Faith is loyalty to the unseen reality. Faith is not wishing or hoping or waiting to see it before you believe it. Faith is assumption, sustained. It's dwelling in the end, living as though what you desire is already yours, with no need to question how. For example, if you have faith in healing and your own healing, you stop looking for symptoms. You speak, move, and plan from the reality of already being well. Your body, the world, and the people around you then begin to reflect that assumption. Faith says, it's done, I'm it. Doubt says, I'll believe it when I see it. And, of course, from the Bible, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. In other words, faith is the bridge between the unseen and the seen. It's the act of claiming what isn't yet visible, as though it already belongs to you. I know it's a bit of a mind bender, but so is the concept of electricity, gravity, and cell phones. Well, it was before we all just accepted it. In chaos, we often feel like we have to wait for the external world to calm down before we can breathe. But in truth, the external world is waiting on you to make the first shift. You do not create peace by controlling everything. You create peace by assuming the state of stability before there is proof. Let's take an example. Imagine you've lost your job or you're in a major life transition and everything feels like it's unraveling. You wake up with that ache in your stomach. You scroll on your phone for answers. You replay conversations. You ask what if over and over. Now imagine waking up in the same situation, but choosing to enter the day as a version of you who knows the new chapter is on the way. You still make coffee, you walk your dog, but you're not spiraling. You're not resisting. You're in a state of grace, of calm, of certainty, fully immersing yourself in the feeling that you are the person who already has that chosen job. That's what faith looks like, Hector. So write out your vision as if it's already true. That's your story. Tell it to yourself during the day, every day, until the unseen becomes seen. When fear arises, return to your imaginal scene, the one where it's already resolved. Pop in there. That's your happy place. That's where you live. I have a happy place, and it's a place I want to go to, and I go there all the time. It's my as yet unseen reality. Faith is not about pretending. It's about living as though you already know how the story ends, and that ending is good. You're not at the mercy of life. You're in a relationship with it. I like to call it our dance with the universe. And when I say the universe, of course, I mean the metaphysical universe or God and not the stars in the sky. So in this episode, we looked at becoming, not becoming from effort, but through assumption that you already have the thing you want. It's a new concept. See yourself already there and at ease with that. You are not becoming one. You are already that one. Let everything else fall away. Until next time, I'm Margot, and please feel free to send your questions in to us either at admin@coastaccessradio.org.nz or to me under the contact tab at margotunlimited.com. Remember to assume the feeling of your wish fulfilled, live from the end, and take my word for it, when you tell a different story, you'll get a different outcome. Let me know how you go. Now, here is our word from the universe, which we always finish our show with, and I think it's a doozy. Here we go. The unseen is where I am. The unseen is the true essence of you. You may speak of authenticity, and you do, but your real authenticity is not an earthly matter. It is about the essence of you, the eternal, undeniable essence of who you really are. Now that is what I call authenticity. Thank you. See you next time.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.